Welcome back to Dave's Gone By on this Sunday night, and sometimes on the show, not too often, but I do occasionally get political. I've tried not to because we've been so inundated with candidates and with the primaries and the upcoming election for the past year or so. Now, I talk about it sometimes on my other time on the radio station, but I try to keep it out of Dave's Gone By because there's such a surfeit of it. And yet, every once in a while, politics rears its ugly head and heads its ugly rear. And both cases are very much informing the book that I hold in my hands right now, ladies and gentlemen. It's a children's book of sorts for very disturbed children, written by a very disturbed grown child by the name of Bruce Kluger. Now, Bruce and I go back a ways because we used to work for the same very demented company, publishing company. We'll get into that. And Bruce has also been on Dave's Gone By a couple of years ago when he was doing freelance articles for Salon.com and a bunch of other places. But now he has co-written this book, Young Dick Cheney, Great American, with David Slavin. He and Slavin do a lot of these little short comic essay type pieces, but they've actually written a book. I mean, it's a short book, and there are a lot of pictures in it, so if you're more like a novella than a novel. But, well, it's the first book. We'll give it to him, and it's pretty damn funny, too. So congratulations,
well,
first of all.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
Young Dick Cheney, Great American. First of all, when did the idea come to you, and how long between the idea and the fruition of having a book?
Well, my writing partner, David Slavin, and I were kind of mulling an idea of a book for a long time. We had been doing satire on NPR for a while. We both have children of grammar school age, so we're very familiar, you know, with bedtime stories and children's books. We had also both recently contributed stories. Dave contributed a story, and I contributed a poem to Marlo Thomas's last children's book, Thanks and Giving All Year Long. I work with Marlo on her books, and that was a collection of stories and poems for children as well. So we were both in that very frame of mind, and we thought, would it be funny to write a children's book or a faux children's book about our vice president, who is a fairy tale unto himself. He's more like the ogre of a fairy tale. So we originally envisioned the book as part of a series of, like in our mind's eye, we had a box set of children's books. There would be Young Dick Cheney, Great American. There would be A is for Abu Ghraib, my first alphabet book. Yeah. There would be Encyclopedia Brownie and The Case of the Missing Levy. We thought we would have a series of books about the Bush administration. So we started with Young Dick Cheney as, ostensibly as a golden book. And lo and behold, we fell in love with our nasty little hero. And it turned from what's called from a golden book into what's called in children's literature a chapter book. And
so you went from sort of like kindergarten, first grade to a third grade kind of book.
Right, third, fourth, maybe even sixth grade.
Well, you're pushing it there, but yeah, okay.
We hired an illustrator, and one of the challenges of doing this was to be able to say all the outrageous things we wanted to say, but to keep it within the format of a children's book. And so that was the reins that was holding us in all the time, is in order to really do satire right, you've got to keep your format. And in the very same way as if we're on the radio doing a Star Wars commercial, and you know, said doing a send up on a sci-fi movie, you still got to do the format right. Then make your jokes work within that framework.
The content grows out of the form, in
yep.
other words. So
yep.
before we go further, let's give the audience, our listeners, a taste of how Young Dick Cheney reads, the style of the book, and how you're telling his story in obviously a not quite authorized way.
Sure. Well, let me give you one from chapter four. It's early on in the book. Chapter four is called A Magic Moment. And it begins, one sunny spring day when Dick was 4 years old, he was playing in his front yard with a beach ball. A gift from his parents, the inflatable sphere was painted to resemble the earth, and young Dick took great delight in making it bounce any which way he wanted it to. He also liked kicking it around. Suddenly, the ball took a wild spin and rolled off in the direction of the driveway, coming to a stop beneath the back wheels of Mr. Cheney's 38 Packard. Crawling beneath the car for the ball, young Dick was startled by a sudden reflection. Just beneath the tailpipe, the sun illuminated a small, sparkling black puddle, creating the most beautiful rainbow young Dick had ever seen. He was drawn to it, like a kitten to a dish of really dark milk. Dick slid on his belly closer to the inky slick. He smelled it. It was sweet and inviting. He touched it. It was wet and silky. Then he tasted it. Suddenly, the cramped space beneath the car seemed to glow as if lit by the heavens above. Sprawled on his stomach and breathing heavily, young Dick swore he could hear music, just like the songs of worship he heard every Sunday at St. Agnes's Weeping Face of Christ Pentecostal Church. A tingle of excitement ran up his short, thick legs. Tossing aside the earth ball, young Dick slithered out from under the car and darted inside. "Pa," he shouted, bursting into the parlor and thrusting his hand beneath his father's face. "I found this under your car. What is it?" Jedediah took a long look at his son's moist black finger, then smiled. "Why, that's oil, son," he said. "You know, black gold, Texas tea." Young Dick looked confused. "It's what makes cars run," the father continued patiently, "and tractors and aeroplanes and machines. It's found underground, all over the earth, and people pay millions of dollars for it." That was when young Dick Cheney had his first heart attack.
It's like one of the running jokes in the book, and in actually Dick Cheney's life, is that he's constantly having heart attacks. Even
yeah, we figured
first,
we,
you know.
We could figure we could break new ground this Saturday. If we could make people laugh at a heart condition, then we were. And David, the jury is still out. Who knows?
Well, and also you do the shooting in the face.
Yes, you
get a lot of mileage out of Dick Cheney's propensity for finding a friend, taking him on a hunting trip. And
a lot of people wind up with bullet-ridden faces in this. As a matter of fact, one of his teachers later on, a teacher named Mr. Blitzer, gives him an F on a school paper and suddenly disappears in a mysterious hunting accident. We never see him again. So there are guns ablazing in this little book of ours. Hi, this is Bruce Kluger. I'm the co-author with David Slavin of Young Dick Cheney, Great American, and you're listening to Dave's Gone By, WGBB in Freeport.
How many lawyers, Bruce Kluger, how many lawyers did you have to vet this book through in order to be published?
That's a very good question. We actually had a couple lawyers take a look at it. Believe it or not, even in a country in which, waterboarding is replacing baseball as a sport of choice, satirists are pretty much protected because most satire is based on public figures. But we have a nice little disclaimer on the table of contents. That reads, all characters and situations are depicted solely for the purposes of comment, criticism, and parody. Any similarity to real people or events without poetic purpose is a coincidence.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that actually a lie? Didn't you actually put that lie in? Some lawyer's going to take that.
We thought that would be a good first joke.
Oh, I see. But even the fact I wonder about, because the front page, the cover is marvelous, and the illustrations are really, really great in Young Dick Cheney, Great American, which is published by Alternate Books. But there's this cool picture of Dick Cheney in a frame as a baby, except it's Dick Cheney's grown, horrible head on his little pudgy baby's shirt, and then his tubby little legs and knees. Are you able to actually do that with a person's head?
God bless Photoshop. That's all I can say.
Well, I know I'm not. I'm talking again legally. I'm talking
legally, sure.
Like
sure.
Terry Gilliam using Queen Victoria.
Sure.
It's okay.
Once again, most pictures are public domain of public people or public domain. You're very careful. If I took this from a personal shot, I might have trouble. But I believe this was a wire service photo, and they do give a wide berth. Believe it or not, they give a wider berth to satirists than they do to the typical journalist. The other thing is, a lot of times people don't want to even go a legal route because most of the time, for example, in a book like this, Dick Cheney, the last thing in the world is Dick Cheney's office is going to come after us because it only draws attention. It draws more attention. That happened with that Broadway show, Avenue Q. It was a clear send-up on Sesame Street and, in fact, was created by former Sesame Streeters. And the scuttlebutt that I heard about was that the real Children's Television Workshop people came in, saw an early version of the show, said, "Oh, my God, this is just outrageous." But they made a joint decision at that time not to pursue any legal grounds for any sort of intellectual property that Avenue Q had because it would only draw attention to the show.
Huh. Well, it's hard to say in retrospect whether they were right or wrong.
Right, because the show became a hit anyway.
Anyway, yeah. But I hope your book becomes a hit, Young Dick Cheney. I'm just getting that title out there again and again so people can Google it and Amazon it and get it from Alternet Books. Do they have an alternetbooks.com? Is that a way?
It's alternet.org. It's a political and news website that's quite popular out there. It used to be one of the top, along with Salon, one of the top ones, and Ariana came along and blew everybody out of the water, but they're still a very, very powerful site, but they just started a book division. We are their first book. They're going to do about four more books this year, but you can also go to www.youngdickcheney.com. I have learned to design websites in the last year.
Oh, very nice.
So I had a lot of fun doing that, and we gave Young Dick a Facebook page, and we gave him a YouTube video, and he's on MySpace.
Excellent.
But, you know, when you're sending somebody email from Young Dick, you know, there's a lot of problem with Googling there.
Spam just everywhere. Nothing you can put in a title line that would work. Now, one thing, we're talking with Bruce Kluger, who co-wrote the book Young Dick Cheney, and kind of wondering about the shelf life of satire. It's kind of interesting to come out with a book when the administration has essentially been a lame duck for well over a year now. You don't even hear everything's about Obama and Hillary and McCain, and George Bush almost seems like an afterthought. You haven't heard anything about Cheney or any of those horrible people. I mean, what's your name?
You make an excellent point, David. Yeah. This is one of the reasons why many of the major public. We went with a smaller publisher. Many of the major publishing houses said to us, early on, this is really hilarious, this is a funny book, and the quickest we can get it out is spring 2008, and by then, Bush Cheney will be old news, irrelevant, yesterday's news. And we took a roll of the dice, because if the one thing we've learned about this administration is that they've broken every conventional wisdom of politics in the past. So we took a roll of the dice that, in fact, they would, I mean, just in the last month alone, Dick Cheney's been in the news three times, once for authorizing some sort of torture from Cheney on down, another time for his tax returns, which came to, I think, $3.4 million in a year when the rest of the economy went into the crapper, and into the gutter, I should say.
Well, no, that's fine. Crapper, we can use the word crapper. We can even use the word dick to refer to Mr.
Let me tell you something, my friend.
Yeah.
We posted this video on YouTube, and it's fine. You can find it on YouTube under the title Young Dick Cheney, Great American. But when we posted it on Yahoo, if you go look for this our video on Yahoo, it says Young D, and then you know how they do in comic books?
The stars?
With stars and pound signs and exclamation points. And there's nothing I could do. There was nothing I could do to read. Every time I tried to revamp it, it came up. So I sometimes share emails with my idol, Frank Rich, and I sent him an email that told him this anecdote. And I said, so now it's official. Our vice president's name is a dirty word.
Ooh.
Yeah, but you make a very good point, David. So the shelf life, you know, could be short. We were taking the roll on the dice that, A, the year is young. You never know what this guy's going to do next. But B, we also think it would be a nice kick out the door for a president and vice president who have been somewhat controversial. Our slogan that sort of came organically is, it's safe to laugh again. That's what we decided our slogan was going to be.
Well, that was the weirdest thing. It was I've commented about this on the program, but what happened was, after 4 years of George Bush, somehow America managed to elect him again. I don't know, and it wasn't even obviously a fiat, a mandate by the Supreme Court this time. He won the vote, and it astonished me that people thought Iraq was a good thing and that he was somehow a good president. And
the timing was amazing. You got to remember that the Iraq War started in 2003, and by then everybody's already starting to gear up for the 2004 election anyway. It was too new. My guess is things started to erode pretty quickly. My guess is if somehow the election was in 2005, he wouldn't have been elected again.
6 months after he won that vote, everything turned. Suddenly, America woke up and said, Iraq is not a good thing. And then he couldn't. And then, amazingly enough, he became Ford. He couldn't do anything right. Suddenly, Everybody turned on him. We knew all the people who voted for him realized it was a disaster.
And yet we had the warnings earlier. I've gotten to know Phil Donahue over the last couple of years, and he was gracious enough to give us a quote on the back of our book, along with Keith Olbermann and Arianna Huffington. And Mel Brooks even gave us a nice blurb for our promotion. But Phil, you got to remember that Phil Donahue was fired from his television program as early as 2002, I believe it was, for speaking out against a war. So I guess by then the war was in play, although it hadn't started. But he was speaking out against this, and you know, in the famous internal memo at NBC News, and he was on MSNBC, the famous internal memo that said, now is not the time for people to be speaking out whenever the rest of the networks are waving the flag. You know, Bill Maher was fired.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
And what's interesting is the people who spoke out against it have been proven right. And you're right, man. 6 months. It's an amazing thing.
It was the weirdest kind of sea change. It really it shocked me too. But everything goes in cycles. We all know that.
Right, right.
And for all we know, and I hate to say this, but maybe 25 years from now will prove that George Bush wasn't bad. God knows.
I'm gonna bet against that. In fact, I'm gonna fly out to Vegas tonight and put the money against that. What's interesting is our whole life, you and me, Dave. We've grown up with Buchanan, Grant, and Warren G. Harding being the worst presidents in American history. And as of this last week, CNN reported, I believe, that some historians got together and said, this could be it. This could be the worst president in history.
Well, I think you're kind of rosy-colored glasses over the past few years because, for my generation, Nixon was a disaster. I mean, I remember the last year or two. I was a kid.
Right.
And I remember how they loathed Nixon, how they despised him, and how ugly the country was, and how people never trusted the government again after him.
Exactly, which is how we got into some pretty dubious presidencies after that. Jimmy Carter was
a horror.
He was he as my brother always likes to say, he was born to be a Supreme Court Chief Justice. His heart was one of the great hearts ever to reside in the White House, but as a president, he was not strong. He was not strong. And then, of course, we went from Ford to him to Reagan and to the chill of 8 years of Reagan. But
actually, Reagan was a fairly decent president for the most part. He just made we probably disagree there, but
I'm not so sure. I've softened on him in recent years, but I've never quite understood the great communicator stuff. He had a good speechwriter, and he was a doddering old guy. And I never forgiven him. Personally, never forgiven
him. For Bitburg?
Pardon me?
For Bitburg?
No. I personally never forgiven him for keeping mum about the AIDS crisis and letting it blow out of proportion until his Hollywood friend died of it. And then he started speaking out, and by then the real demon was out of the bag at that point. And
also the air traffic controllers. I think he was that was a horrible thing that he did,
right,
bashing the union. The unions have never recovered in this country from what he did to the...
But
actually, my only point about the presidents was, it's like, I also came of a... Well, I was a child, but I remember just how everybody hated LBJ and how Lyndon was responsible for the escalation of Vietnam.
Yes, but in both the cases of LBJ and Nixon, it was their personal flaws. LBJ pulled the levers of government like nobody else. He created the civil rights movement or continued Kennedy's. He was an incredible... But his pride... I once spoke to Doris Kearns Goodwin, and I said, wouldn't this have happened to any other president? And she said, no. In fact, Johnson's pride over not wanting to preside over a war that he said we would lose was the thing that did him in. She said she remembers him saying, I feel like I'm on the last one on the airplane, everybody else has jumped out and there's no parachutes because they disappeared one by one. Same thing with Nixon. You take away that pathological self-destructiveness, and he was a brilliant tactician, both domestically but especially internationally. I mean, there was a reason that Henry Kissinger commented that only Dick Nixon could go to China, and yet he was one of our great nutcases of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Self-destructive So that's why I think he doesn't rank down there as our worst, because he was, you know, he did open the doors to China and a little bit to Russia as well.
But that's why I'm saying history has grown softer, perhaps, on someone like an LBJ, because in the heat of the moment, LBJ was about the disaster of Vietnam.
Yep.
In retrospect, LBJ was also about the Great Society.
Right. Oh,
right.
I see what you're saying. In this case, though, I have racked my brain for it. I can't
think. You can't think of any.
There is nothing, David. There is nothing. You know, No Child Left Behind. It's a disaster. And I called it in one of my columns in USA Today, very well intentioned, but totally underfunded and horrifically executed. Beyond that, what? Tax breaks and a war.
Is that why the stock market hasn't crashed?
Is why.
Everybody's racking their... I think it's only because they keep cutting the interest rates, and therefore the stock market responds with hope. But what I don't understand, and I think the one of the reasons that he won in 2004, and one of the reasons why even, you know, he still has his defenders, is because although everything's gone wrong, for some reason the stock market makes money.
That's
so
right.
It's all right. You know, it's gone down a bit over the past couple of months.
Well, that's just
but
that he's shown that since the very beginning. That's his priority. I mean, this is the crazy thing. You can say it in election after election. Oh, yeah, but, you know, and for some reason it's ignored as a party line. But his concern really is with business and with donors and with, you know, he'll come down on the side of business people if it comes to the environment or the automobiles, or he will come down on the side of business. He is from a business family. He is a businessman, and his concern about the top X percent and the richest people in this country, but he got away with it because he can talk like, you know, a down-home boy, which is what I'm hoping, I'm crossing my fingers, works against McCain this time, because we've now already elected a president who we could imagine having a beer with. And I think...
I can't imagine having a beer with George Bush. And I don't even drink beer, but...
Enough people could. But the point is, the plain talk, the down-home, we're done with that. As a matter of fact, there was some comedian who was talking about Obama and the big complaints about him being a lead. Oh, it was Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart said, I would actually like somebody who's so smart that they can be a snob. I don't want to go out for a beer with him. I want to make sure the country's okay.
Right. If only we, you know, America had woken up during Al Gore's run and realized.
Imagine that.
I know.
When are you going to run for president? You're celebrating an anniversary. How many years have you been on the air at this point?
5.5 years. Well, thanks for I have a marriage anniversary. Married 10 years. I'm on the air 5.5 years. What anniversary are you thinking of?
No, I'm thinking that. I thought you passed the 5, or I couldn't remember. I actually thought it was 10. That's how accustomed to this I am. No, 5-year anniversary on the air.
Yeah, man.
Well, and you haven't been thrown in jail yet, right?
No, man. I guess it is that whole satire thing. They allow me to do pretty much what, well, because I'm on Sunday night and nobody listens. But and the station has finally started archiving shows. So I think now the government will finally get around to listening and realize some of the things I've been saying and doing.
That's right.
And now I'm going to be in, you know, terrible, terrible trouble. But it's been fun.
Well, we've got to worry about the government at all costs. As a matter of fact, I was thinking earlier, this book came out, and there's a Jewish word called beshert, which means, of course, as you know, meant to be. And we come down very hard on Lynn Cheney in the book, because to me she's the walking, talking sexual hypocrisy for a number of reasons. So we're a little hard on her. I mean, I'm not sure if you even know this, but her first novel had lesbian scenes in it.
Did it really?
Yes.
Oh.
Sisters. And it was quickly taken out of print when they became vice presidential family. And she's got a gay daughter, yet her husband is part of this administration. It's anti-gay marriage. So I'm just thinking that, you know, she's ripe for satire. Well, anyway, she is in my neighborhood 2 weeks after the book comes out. I'm thinking, this is the share. I can make some press by this, by going to this event. Clearly, reporters are going to be there. And maybe if I can give her, buy a copy of her book, and her book is also about the same thing that my book is, growing up in Wyoming, where she and Dick were actually high school sweethearts.
Yeah.
Only in our version, she's a little, just kind of different kind of high school sweetheart. But in any case...
No, she's a good girl for most of the book. She paints herself green. That's about as naughty as she gets.
Well, it really takes a long time for her to acknowledge that she loves Dick.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you.
Well, there's the lesbian theme right there. Okay, yeah.
So So anyway, I went to the lecture, and I wanted to, you know, maybe offer her my book afterwards. Maybe a reporter could see. And I tell you, I discovered some about myself that night. People were really enjoying her, and I felt like I would be a skunk at the garden party if I showed up at the table and asked her to sign my book, and she'd look on the back, and she'd look on the cover, and she'd see it. But the real concern was, we're dealing with the vice president's wife. I was positive it was going to be a one-way ticket to Guantanamo Bay. You know, you've got to be careful with this. I mean, I'm talking to you from my kitchen phone right now. Who knows who's listening in, right?
Well, certainly nobody listening to the radio. I guess, and with the rules, the way they bent them in order to do the post 9/11, what do we call those? My brain is blanking on them, but in order, you can arrest anybody on suspicion of terrorism,
yep,
and then have a charge 5 months later, you know. And in between, I guess they can put you in Guantanamo Bay or worse, somewhere in New Jersey.
Well, which, and the jury's still out on which is worse. Well, I must tell you, though, for our living, and I won't name names because I don't want to, as they say, gore my own ox, but we have...
Oh, I gore my ox at least daily. It feels good, yeah.
I don't want that word picture.
Thank you.
We have had our satire turned down. I can tell you, the first day that we had a piece turned down because of content was on September 12th. Not that we were writing funny. We had a piece in the works on September 10th, and we were working on it. September 11th comes for a popular website, and it was tanked. It was pulled on September 12th. Now, in that case, we didn't even ask. We said, obviously, let's pull this because the country's in trouble. But subsequently, over the next 2, 3, 4 years, and up until today, we now still run into roadblocks. I'm talking about my satire partner, David, and myself. We run into roadblocks all the time because people are a little edgy about, I mean, do I think I'm really going to get hauled off to Guantanamo? Of course not. Do I think it's a little harder to put food on my kids' plate to be funny, you know, the way satirists used to be about the people in power? Yes, it is harder. And that's the killer. There's a very, very, very big newspaper who I spoke to recently, and I said, are you guys going to run a review of Young Dick Cheney? And the book editor said to me, not unless we have a book that makes fun of a Democrat as well.
Oh, boy. I mean, what was it, the Washington Post? Had to be the Washington
Post. No, I can't say, because I also, you know, occasionally make money from some papers. So, you know, so it would be in Dallas. But my point is, it really doesn't even matter who it was, because it's pretty much across the board. The biggest myth in this country is about the liberal media. It is extremely conservative media. They're run by corporations, and they don't want to offend.
Right. They're scared to hell of a backlash, so they feel they've got to bend over backwards to appear fair. Although I think they're removing the fairness doctrine thing from radio, aren't they? Radio and TV, you don't have to have equal time anymore. Am I wrong on that?
Oh, maybe. You're in case there, because, I mean, Phil Donahue told me once that and he's gone on the record about this, is when he was doing his show, I think that the ratio is they had to have two conservatives on for every liberal. I mean, it wasn't even fair and balanced. It was fair and imbalanced. Unfair and imbalanced.
Incredible. Incredible.
Hi, this is Bruce Kluger, co-author with David Slavin of the new book, Young Dick Cheney, Great American. And you're listening to another Great American on Dave's Gone By, WGBB in Freeport.
Let's move just away from the book for a little bit with Bruce Kluger here. He is the author of Young Dick Cheney, but also he and his writing partner, David Slavin. Is it pronounced Slavin?
Slavin.
I've been slaming away mispronouncing it all this time. Oh, well. And so you guys have been writing. That's really what you do. You write these little essays, these Buchwaldian kind of political Bombeckian missives. appear in major newspapers.
Either in newspapers or on NPR. I mean, our first pieces for National Public Radio was, on All Things Considered, was behind the scenes at the Energy Task Force, at Dick Cheney's Mysterious Energy Task Force. And it was really, you know, we revealed who it was, and it was just a bunch of the guys. And, of course, Christy Todd Whitman was there because she was our brand new, what was she at the time, environment or?
Oh, God. Yeah, something after her governorship, she took
But we had all the big oil boys. They were actually just in the room divvying up the states. or divvying up the world, I think. But anyway, they sent her out for sandwiches, you know, and laughed when she left the room. And it's funny, I saw something on the web recently, not long ago,
yeah,
that some guy was cruising around links that he saved, and he brought that up and said, talk about prescient. Now, at the time, we just made fun of him because he was, you know, a rich guy, Dick Cheney, because he was a rich guy. And it turns out that I remember distinctly, I don't know where, if you remember this, but when he first said he wouldn't reveal who was in his energy task force, I remember thinking to myself, are you allowed to do that? Are you allowed to say you can't, you won't tell? You're our vice president. And strangely enough, you know, not telling has been the theme of this.
That's been the whole thing of the administration, or certainly his end of it. Let me ask, I know we talked about this about 2-3 years ago when you were on the show back then, and just basically talking about politics and things like that, but is that your, are you able to do that pretty much full time?
I'm sort of, after leaving, did we discuss where we both work? Did we say the name? Did we say the dreaded P name yet?
The dreaded P name, the name we can say on.
I still love the magazine. I still love it. We both work at Playboy.
Yeah, I worked for a year and a half there. You were there for a much longer time.
I was there
time.
For 13 years. But then when I left, I left in 99. I took a long time trying to, you know, get roots and figure out what to do. So, no, the satire is only part of the things I do. I'm also on the board of contributors at USA Today, which means I write regular op-eds for them. And I carved out a sort of fatherhood beat there. And I'm also a contributing editor of Parenting Magazine, and have
yes.
a sort of side thing is reviewing home video and DVD for children and for adults. I was the DVD critic for Us Weekly for a while, so I still do a lot of movie and DVD reviewing. But, you know, there's a sort of family beat. So for my brain, the satire has been, you know, kind of a yin to the yang there. And
because you have to watch Barney videos half the day. And
Hey, listen, I love that dinosaur.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I'm telling you honestly, I call it the dog whistle. Grown-ups, like, hate him, and I'm saying anything that makes a child light up like that, they're communicating on a whole level we can't hear.
So Baby Einstein, too, I guess.
And I caught a lot of heat in August, back in August. The day before I went to London, I was doing radio stuff as I'm packing because I wrote a piece because there was some ridiculous report that came out that said Baby Einstein tapes were not only... they were not only not helping children, which we all knew, but they were making them stupider. And I wrote, you know, I said, there's a very precious little I can call myself an expert in. But one thing is children's video and DVD, because I get everything.
Right.
And I write about it. And I said, let me tell you something. They and Disney, as much as you want to go after, you know, the monolith of Disney, Baby Einstein, which was bought by Disney, consistently fine product. It's not about the content. It's about the time. Parents who believed that sitting your kid and not having any interaction with them, that's dangerous because that doesn't give children human interaction. And I'm not an expert in child psychology. I'm just a parent, and I stress that in all of my pieces. But it's common sense. But anyway, this report that came out of University of Washington had some. What do they call it? Screwy math? What is the term that Al Gore coined? Something math. Silly math or something.
And funny math. Something like that.
And the statistics were really bad. But anyway, I got nailed on that. I was right before we went on a family trip, and I said that this report was bunk, and I was called every name in the book by bloggers and everybody, and said they accused me of parking my children and chaining them to the TV and making them look at it.
Well, that's what I would do if I had a kid. In fact, definitely, my kid gets chained to the radiator 2 hours a day.
Oh, boy, David.
Two and a half in winter, yeah.
Oh, boy, David, we gotta take care of you. I'd actually like to see a small version of you.
No, you wouldn't. Yeah. I'm already a small version of me, if you think about it. And also, be honest. Be really honest now. And I want you absolutely, you know, I'm holding you to be truthful because of the satirist and the kind of writer that you are. Did the Wiggles suck now that the main guy's sick?
You know what? It's so funny that you asked that. I mean, I was a diehard, and I knew their publicist. So I saw them as early as, and I kid you not, playing in the toy store.
I thought you were going to say playing in the toilet, which would really be interesting.
Playing in the back of the toy store on 87th Street. They were very smart, and I'm not making a joke here. I'm not being satirical.
Yeah.
They became famous by doing warm-up for Barney. They were very smart. They went out on the road with the Barney tour and were warm-up. I mean, they were excellent. And they were all, by the way, they were also, they're all, you know, grown-up musicians playing clubs and stuff. And I think one of them had a day job as a children's, you know, as an educator.
Yeah.
And they figured out how to marry the two. So I always was a gigantic fan of theirs. But I freaked out when the purple one got sick.
Yeah, man.
I never knew what happened. So I have to tell you, I cannot be a good authority on this because they've you know, when you have children, you follow their tastes. So I'm in the whole kind of Disney High School Musical, you know, Avril Lavigne kind of.
Well, no, I did even worse. I mean, I my mistake was opening for Tinky Winky on his solo tour. That was just, oh, man.
Oh, but David, you were
the things that got thrown
so
at me.
Good.
Oh, I was good.
You were good.
But the language, the parents were upset. You don't use the CS word when you're dealing with three-year-olds.
No,
you have to wait until they're...
No, I should have told you that.
I know.
No, it's T. It's thumb.
Well, just to finish up our delightful conversation, we have such... we got to do this so much more often than
we
do this.
You really
should. Yeah. Bruce Kluger, the co-author with David Slavin of Young Dick Cheney, Great American. And by the way, let's,
by Tim Foley, by the way.
You know, I'm sorry that I haven't kept mentioning him because the illustrations are quite delightful and as much a part of the book as your lousy writing. But, you know, not just kidding. Just it's available from alternet.org. Am I correct?
Alternet.org, or just go to www.youngdickcheney.com.
And that's the website you designed, right?
Yep.
Cool. And you have a website of your own where people can kind of...
Yeah, you can go to brucekluger.com.
And you post your blogs and your stories and your
all
links to all your stuff.
All of my stories are posted there. It was called Once You Put the Kids to Bed. It was literally a year in the making. When the kids were in bed, when my wife was asleep, I would piece together the website. So it took about a year to do it. So, but now it's all up there. Now whenever I have a new piece, I just post it up there. And I'm on Huffington Post a lot. And she's becoming, well, she is now the number one blog in America, I mean, in the world. So this is a woman who has taken the Internet by storm. Ariana is just amazing.
Good for her.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I must admit I was kind of wary about her. Well, I heard the accent and I saw her attitude. I don't know. But then she turned out to be this raving liberal, and I was like, okay.
Well, the reason Dave and I are invited bloggers there is because when she first announced that she was going to do this thing, we immediately wrote a satirical piece in the Los Angeles Times about how ridiculous it's going to be with all these celebrities blogging and stuff. And then she's on the phone with me, and she says, would you and David like to be bloggers? And boy, I you know, it's so funny, man. You know, it's like peeing out in or outside the tent. She was a very smart woman. She's saying, you know, come on and join us. And it's amazing how you're
I think it's smarter to pee outside the tent.
That's right.
I had to think about that one for a minute, but outside is better.
But it's amazing. This, you know, I'm a sucker for flattery. I was like, oh, sure, anything you want. I'll never write anything like that again. But she's got a great sense of humor. She's terrific.
Excellent. And as I think we've all witnessed this evening, Bruce, you've got a great sense of humor. I hope you keep writing. I hope you visit us again much, much sooner than you did the last time.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, that was my fault. I mean, I should have asked you back a lot sooner. So write another book real quick.
I'm going to try that. And you keep up the good work, too. You're a force in radio. Seriously, 5 years is amazing for anything these days. So congratulations on that.
Mutual love here.
You
mutual
got it.
Love with my homie, Bruce Kluger, author of Young Dick Cheney. Thanks again so much, Bruce, for
Thank
being
you,
in the
David.
Neighborhood.